Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my co-host is Misty Hall, and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. So, good evening, Misty. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Good evening, Bonnie. How are you tonight?
I'm doing good.
Good.
I think you and I are both on the mend, right?
Yes, I'm so happy. I've rested and taken such good care of myself today. I practiced what I preached today, which was self-care, and it was so good, just doing nothing. Some days you need to do nothing.
Yep, and we always tell our women, learn to take care of yourselves first. So I think that's a really good way to do it, do something that's good for you.
Mm-hmm.
I think that as, you know, straight wives, we're natural caretakers of the world. I think that's part of our personalities. Do you think that's
the Absolutely. We are, you know, as you and I discuss this, and we look at so many of the commonalities, it's a huge one. If you look at the professions of most of the straight wives, most definitely they're in the helping, caring profession. And even
mm-hmm.
if they're not in the helping, caring, or working in that profession, naturally, they are that nurturer, that caring person that always takes care of someone else before they take care of themselves.
Always
and
trying to pick
really,
things up. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
By the way, tonight we're really excited because we're going to have our friend Wendy coming on. And
yes.
for those people who got my newsletter this week, Wendy wrote a beautiful poem, and I've had so many wonderful responses to it. So I asked Wendy to be our guest and to read her poem and to talk a little bit about it. And I know that, you know, for the women who wrote to me from all over the world, actually I got comments from Australia, Canada, the United States, you know, women who read this poem, and I passed on those comments to Wendy. She was just so moved by it. So I said, maybe, Wendy, if you don't mind, come on the show tonight and read your poem. Wendy is our support group member who wrote those beautiful lists of what women feel like while they're going through the recovery period.
And she's got a way with words.
Doesn't she?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she knows
how
to sling those words together. Absolutely. And
they have
so, pardon me?
And they have such meaning to straight wives. The way she puts the words together is amazing.
She does. And we'll talk a little bit about her list also while she's on the show with us tonight for people who haven't heard Wendy before. And Wendy's really, truly an inspirational story to many of us. I just wanted to mention, Misty, as we're waiting for Wendy to come on the show, that we're starting to get things ready for our annual get-together this September. So for people who need information, I know it's early, it's only April, but you know how fast those months fly, those summer months. So this year we're having our annual get-together here in Philadelphia, and Misty and I will be co-sponsoring this. And we'll be doing a lot of healing workshops and really getting to know other women who are in our situation. And I think that the best part of these get-togethers, Misty, is that the fact that women get to meet others when they feel so alone and isolated. Don't you agree about that?
Absolutely. That's just coming together and meeting other women that have gone through this, survived this, or just discovered, wherever they are in the process, is so healing, just coming together. Because at that point in time, you see, you witness that you're not the only person in the whole world going through this, because that's exactly how you feel.
Mm-hmm. So this gives women the opportunity to meet each other, and I
Absolutely.
Just think it's a wonderful thing.
Mm-hmm.
Also, in case anybody would like to call in, our call-in number here is area code 646-716-4893. So, Misty, have you been doing anything as far as workshops? Are you having any coming up?
I am. You know, I just thought of that today as I was doing my self-care of doing nothing. I am getting those geared back up. I've had some interest in those. I've had some interest of, like you and I have talked about before, some adult children. I've had interest of late teen children, which I would call those definitely adult or young adult. And also the wives, just, you know, the next level, you know, the ex-wives, I should say. You know, like, what's the next step? Some women are ready to get back into the dating game again, and they don't want to repeat the same mistakes because, like you and I have talked about, even if you meet someone, you know, more than likely they're going to be straight, but you can still repeat some of the same patterns. The best way for a good pattern is identify a pattern. So I'll be focusing on that. I'll also be focusing on just a general one, you know, for any newbies that are just finding out and getting ready to start the healing process. So those are the three ones I'll be focusing on. They'll probably be coming up sometime this summer. You know, I know they're important, and they're, it's just, I like to get, you know, once I get the request in, it's always good. You know, it's almost one of those things, the more the merrier. I like to keep them small. You know, there's never over eight. But it's always good to have between five and eight because you just get that much input. And once again, it's like, it's almost as good as coming together in person because you get to hear other people's stories, and it lets you know you're not the only one in that particular situation.
I think that's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And
so those are,
women who attended are always feeling so much better after they go through that.
Yeah, yeah. So those are coming up soon. The info's on the way soon for those.
Okay, great. And I think we have Wendy here with us. Hold on one moment. Wendy, is that you?
It's me.
Hi, Wendy. It's Bonnie and Misty.
How are
Hello.
You?
And we're so happy that you could join us tonight.
Well, I'm happy to do that again. It's been a while.
How's the weather in Texas doing?
Beautiful. Beautiful, beautiful. Not hot yet, so it's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
We'll
give it another.
Pollen, though, so pardon my coughing.
It was not hot yet, Wendy. Give it another couple of weeks.
No, it's wonderful. I'm appreciating every minute of it. But actually, I'm coming to Philadelphia this week, believe it or not.
Really?
I hear it's cold up there.
A little chilly. How long are you going to be here?
I'm just over the weekend, my dad's 90th birthday, we're celebrating. So.
Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah, all five kids will all be together from across the country and some grandchildren, and really looking forward to it. So,
where does he live?
He is in Kennett Square.
Oh, okay.
He's near Longwood Gardens.
Yep, about an hour from me, Wendy.
Yeah.
Well, maybe if you're traveling along the road, you'll stop by.
Yeah, I know. I wish I had more time. It's going to be very busy. So.
All right. Well, I'll look forward to your next visit then.
Okay.
So, Wendy, I wanted to thank you so much for contributing to our newsletter as far as your poem, because we've had so many lovely responses back already.
My goodness, I should say. My goodness.
But the way you write just seems to move our women so much, you know, the way that you're able to express your feelings. So we told people before you called in tonight that not only would we ask you to, you know, read your poem, but maybe you could discuss a little bit about the list that you've made up before for your recovery roadmap.
Okay.
Put you on the spot.
Okay.
But first, do you mind telling people, can you tell people a little bit about your situation first?
Okay. Well, I'm 2.5 years divorced almost. That's amazing. That is pretty amazing. But after 23 years of marriage, not very good marriage, to a workaholic, which that's what I thought was the crux of the problem, I discovered some things on the computer and confronted him. And, of course, he balked at it and thought I was nuts, and I pressed on and finally admitted some things, although he really wasn't acting on anything. I was not pleased with what I saw on the computer. I was in total shock, total, complete shock. And then we went from there and decided that I immediately concluded there was no way I was going to stay married. It was not what a marriage was. There was never a question in my mind that I would stay married to somebody who had different feelings. So we decided to do an amicable divorce at the end of the school year. Our child was, a junior, sophomore, and junior in high school. My daughter was in college. And so I immediately went into therapy to try to figure out what was going on and how to cope with all of this. And then therapist said, well, we need to start dropping the seeds of divorce for the kids so they wouldn't be totally shocked. And then about a month after, of course, he didn't want to do that. I had to do that myself. And then about a month into that, he decided to take some side trips on things when he went to visit his mother, and he had a lot of missing in action time, and I just figured, well, I guess he's at video stores or something. I didn't want to think about it, but anyway, to make a long story short, shortly I remember writing to you, Bonnie, and asking how common is this. I just could not picture him doing this, but you told me it is very common, and so I tried to sort of get my head around it, and then, shock of all shocks, a month in after I told the kids we were getting divorced, he ended up not coming home from work, and I got a call from a county jail. He'd been arrested from a roadside park, so...
And Wendy, I want to just tell you, this happens to so many of our women.
I'm telling you.
I must get like two or three letters every week from women whose husbands were arrested.
I mean, and talk about fine, upstanding, conservative, impeccably clean-cut person. This was just shook me to the core. It was like a dream. It was just like a nightmare. I just couldn't believe it. I just couldn't believe it. That he would take a chance like that. I just couldn't get over it. But anyway, that was a rough couple of years. It was a small county, slow court system. Then he was.
But were you separated at that point?
No, he was living at home.
Mm-hmm.
But I immediately then his. He worked for a school system, so they got wind of it, and he was put on administrative leave, and so I didn't know what was going to happen with his future employment-wise, so I couldn't exactly throw him out, but he also started dipping into our money for lawyer legal fees, and that's when I had to go ahead and file. I just had to protect the assets that we had, which weren't too many, but... It was, you know, so I was advised that I needed to go and file. So I had to go behind his back and file. That really went against my grain, too. But I did it. And a year and a half later, I guess, he finally, on a technicality, was able to keep his job in a different capacity. But that's a whole other story. But anyway, what he put us through was just unbelievable. And I had a lot of trouble trying to decide what to do with the kids. Telling the kids the divorce was traumatic enough for them. My son was in his school when all this went down, legal stuff went down, so he had been traumatized through all of that. I just couldn't throw gay on top of everything else. So.
Now, is it in the newspapers at all?
No, luckily. Luckily, it did not. It almost did. We were told.
Right.
I was very, very lucky. And I work in the same school district, so it was very tense.
Mm-hmm.
When I think about it now, it's like, oh, that was a whole other world now. But anyway, that was last summer, I finally decided that I just couldn't. So we got through the divorce. Kids were okay, I guess, but I just always felt that they really needed to know. I deserved to have my truth told. I felt they should know the truth of what was really the demise of the marriage, and I felt very strongly about it, but I had to be very careful in my timing, and I wanted to tell them together, and I needed to be okay with all of it before I could put this on them, because I needed to be enough removed from it and strong enough in myself that I could deal with them not knowing how they were going to react. So I think I did it right, although I know we had some conversations, and right before it happened, my ex-husband went nuts on me, did not want me to tell the kids because he was not living another lifestyle, so why should I? And cetera, et cetera, but I felt pretty strongly. And I was getting ready to have surgery, and they were both in town at the same time, and I told them. And it went very well, I think, because I was very calm about it by that point. And I had rehearsed. And
were they surprised?
They were surprised. They were.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people had told me that, oh, you'll be surprised. They probably already know. And I thought, okay, all right, maybe so. But no, they did not know.
Did they think you had a good marriage, Wendy?
No, but I think they attributed to his relentless narcissistic workaholism, never being around, always making his career a priority over the kid, over us. And that was another reason, you know, through the marriage, even though I didn't know the real reason, I did not feel that I was presenting a good model for my kids, because they were seeing me let him abandon us and let him treat me as a low priority, and I always didn't, that wasn't good for me, but it also wasn't good for my kids to see. Way further back, I just didn't think I was strong enough to leave him, and I didn't think I could survive on my own. I didn't think I could support myself. I wasn't emotionally strong enough, although I was making more money then than I am now, but I just didn't think I could do it. And I also felt that when they were younger, if we were having to co-parent, I didn't think he would hold his end of the bargain, and I didn't want my kids to go through that. They would, you know, he would back out of things. I was sure he would, and I couldn't do it. So for me, the timing, I think, really ended up pretty okay, because I had one in college, as I said, and then my son finished out his last year of high school without his dad living at home. But he lives nearby, so he does see him. But anyway, so I've been on my own now for, wow, almost 2.5 years. That's pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And thanks,
you feel
to a
strong
whole lot
now?
Of support. Excuse me?
Do you feel like you're strong now?
For the most part. For the most part, yeah. I have my moments. I have my realities of I really am alone.
Mm-hmm.
I really... You know, those kind of panics. If something, the other last week I had car trouble, and that just sent me into a tailspin, because if I don't have a car, then I can't go to work, and there's nobody else to lean on. That's the hardest part for me.
Mm-hmm.
Not that he was around a lot, but I knew if something really bad happened, he would be there.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea now that I'm dependent on, you know, neighbors and friends that are, you know, not the same as a spouse, is hard. It's just something I'm having to, it takes a long time to accept. Really, it has been for me.
And I think that's, you know, a reality for a lot of women. You know, when people say to me, well, I'm not quite sure why I haven't taken the step to get divorced, but I just feel afraid.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that fear of having to be on your own when you
mm-hmm.
haven't been for so many years,
mm-hmm.
and no matter how bad a marriage is or no matter how ridiculous it is,
mm-hmm.
that at least you know when you need something, you can fall back on someone,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
you know, that you kind of ignore the reality of what the real situation is.
Right, and I had not done, I mean, I had basically held the family together and done most everything of the parenting, but I had not been doing any of the finances for 23
mm-hmm.
years, and so that was
a scary
part.
Thing.
That was
absolutely
very scary. And fortunately, we were both conservative with money, so we were not in debt, fortunately.
Mm-hmm.
That's a huge, huge thing. And then, I forgot what else I was going to say.
Wendy, did you think something was wrong with your marriage from the very beginning?
Yeah, pretty early on. But I attributed it to the fact that I didn't have much experience. He didn't have much experience. So it would get better.
Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people think that. You know,
yep.
They just don't know what to expect. And another thing we were talking about in our support chat tonight, I don't know if this affects you or not. I don't mean to put you on the spot.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of us, you know, me included, came from families where there was a lot of dysfunction in our own families growing up,
mm-hmm.
as far as our parents,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, there may
mm-hmm.
not have been in yours, but I'm
mm-hmm.
saying that a lot of our women have families that were pretty dysfunctional. So we really didn't understand what marriage should be about. I know that...
I agree with that. I would say it was functional in a very traditional way. You know, my parents were married over 50 years,
mm-hmm.
but my father was emotionally unavailable,
mm-hmm.
which I think a lot of men of the, you know, or Depression era, early World War II era, whatever. My dad's about to be 90, so that tells you what generation he's from.
Mm-hmm.
Was and one of five kids, so not a lot of close, intimate relationship with my parents.
Mm-hmm.
It was just kind of a gang of kids all the time, you know. So I had some voids, I guess, that I didn't know. I guess I didn't feel worthy of being treated especially special or anything like that, I guess you'd say. I was never a daddy's girl. I was never a princess getting what I wanted. It was never like that. So I didn't expect
mm-hmm.
much.
And I think that happens for a lot of us. You know, we just
mm-hmm.
don't realize what the expectations of marriage are.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're either gauging it by the fairy tales we grew up with,
mm-hmm.
of, you know,
mm-hmm.
Snow White and Cinderella,
mm-hmm.
you know, who lived happily ever after.
Mm-hmm.
And we expect that this is what our love life is hopefully going to be, that we'll find somebody who can love us unconditionally
mm-hmm.
like that and make us just feel wonderful forever.
Mm-hmm.
Because we don't really have role models at home to look towards. You know, I certainly didn't. I know that Misty came from a good family, but I think Misty's more of a rarity.
Mm-hmm.
Than the usual.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, there's no family's perfect, but I think my family came pretty close to providing everything that a child should have.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, I think I'm an exception to a lot of that. There are, you know, as you know, and another thing on top of all that, our culture in general, I don't care how good the family is, our American culture in general puts women at the bottom sometimes, you know, and gives us all this stuff, you know, and just Hollywood or whatever, just all these messages that girls get from the media, even today.
Mm-hmm.
So even if you do come from a great family, you still are apt to be prone to do certain things and just accept certain things as normal, I think.
Maybe.
But, you know,
but I think when you have a family that's not stable, you have a greater chance.
Absolutely.
Because you just don't have a role model to, you know, follow.
Yeah.
You know,
absolutely.
You just went along in a marriage where, you know, there wasn't that much, you know, affection and passion.
Right. Mine were very, I don't want to say Puritan, but, you know, it was it
mm-hmm.
functioned very well. I mean, there was a very clear division of labor. Dad
mm-hmm.
hit the yard. Mom took care, you know, my mother didn't work. She was college educated but did not work. And so it was a well-oiled machine. But it was, you know, very mechanical. It was not a real affectionate, loving. I mean, and we did wonderful things. You know, I cannot discount my parents, but that emotional component was not there for me. And my
yeah.
and my mother was kind of no nonsense. She was not a girly girl, and so that was kind of squeezed out of me, I guess. To not expect to be treated as a girl, you know. You were supposed to be a good girl, but a lot of the feminine things were not encouraged.
I bring
family.
This up only because of the fact that this has come up a lot in the, you know, recent last few weeks with people
mm-hmm.
that I'm working with where
mm-hmm.
they say that people say, well, how come you didn't know? I mean, how is it you can live with somebody all these years and not know? And I really believe, you know, and some of these women keep telling me, and I believe them, mm-hmm. that they knew something was wrong in the marriage, but
yes.
why would they think it's homosexuality?
Right.
You know,
I knew immediately that there was an intimacy problem
right.
from the start. From the start. But I thought that was because it was me, that I was
uh-huh.
not attractive enough. I couldn't hold his attention.
Mm-hmm.
I, you know, for whatever, all that, it just kind of confirmed for me. It didn't seem wrong. It just confirmed that I was somehow didn't deserve any better than what I was getting.
And I think that's such a major thing, what you just
yeah.
said, that
yeah.
that's how we internalize it. We don't externalize and think
mm-hmm.
what's wrong with them. We think
mm-hmm.
what's wrong with us.
And it was a very private, I mean, it was a very private topic that I didn't talk about with anybody.
Mm-hmm.
So, I didn't compare notes with friends or anything. So, and then as time went on, you know, you have children and all that, and you read in the magazines that things, you know, go downhill for a little while, so I just accepted it. But I just found myself wanting to get my hands on every magazine article I could to try to get a clue as to why it wasn't getting better. But I didn't dare tell anybody. I didn't dare talk about it to anybody. I was just kind of on the lookout all the time, trying to, I could not put my finger on what it was. I mean, and the more I tried and the more I did, in which I ended up enabling him and his work addiction in my attempt to get attention, that's where it went wrong. But I thought I was doing the right thing. If I, as you've said many, many times, if I just loved him more, if I did more, then he would come back and, you know, and want me. And
mm-hmm.
and I would say, well, he's busy, you know. Well, then that, you know, then vacation time would come and go, and still didn't, you know. And I just, it just starts eating away, because at the beginning you think it's going to get better, but after 10, 15 years and it's not better, then, you know, something's wrong. But I could not figure out what's wrong. Now, I finally did try to confront him, and I had to write letters to him. I couldn't talk to him because he would change the subject all the time.
Uh-huh.
And I would. I'd say, what is, you know, I remember even quoting the wedding vows that I, you know, you were supposed to cherish me, and why are you not cherishing me? You know, what am I doing wrong? And I do remember now, maybe occasionally he would say, you know, it's not you, it's not you. And then I'd go, well, then what is it? And he couldn't tell me. So then
but
he just changed
the
subject.
But did the word gay ever cross your mind at all?
It did, probably by not just because, just as a process of elimination, I couldn't figure it would be anything.
Right.
Else.
Because I knew he wasn't having an affair. This is one thing I've been telling, you know, some of the men that I'm working with who are
mm-hmm.
married
mm-hmm.
in their, you know, they're working with me in their efforts to come out to their wives.
Well, I'm glad they are.
Well, they are, but they're not working quite as fast as I would like them to, but at least they're working on it.
That's right.
But the point is, like, I say to them, because I have a lot of men say this to me also, gay men, you know, how could my wife not know? You know, they think that she knows on some level. And I say to them, it's kind of, and this is now the new thing that I figured out in my head, what I compare it to.
Mm-hmm.
It's, I don't know if you do jigsaw puzzles at all.
Mm-hmm.
But if you've ever done a jigsaw puzzle, what if you had a 250, you know, piece jigsaw puzzle
mm-hmm.
and you were putting together this beautiful picture and 20
mm-hmm.
of the pieces were missing? I mean, you would never be able to put that picture together.
Right.
If you didn't know that the pieces were missing.
Right.
And I say to them, you know, this is like a jigsaw puzzle that we're trying
mm-hmm.
to figure out, but 20
mm-hmm.
pieces are missing.
Yeah.
So there's no way, you know, you may think your wife knows something on some level, but when she asks you anything, then you deny it.
Yeah.
Or you keep going back to, well, you're feeling
mm-hmm.
depressed, or you're feeling,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
this or you're feeling that, and, you know, we just can't get a handle on it. Why would we think it's gay?
Mm-hmm.
You know, but they just don't get it. You know, I think maybe if I made that comparison, some of them
yeah,
are
yeah, that
makes, a little more.
I mean, I would say that, But then immediately I'd say, well, there's no way, because he did not show any of the stereotypical behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would dismiss it immediately. And I, to this day, I still don't know if he just was really good actor and really good at covering all this up from early childhood with his parents, so that he just
mm-hmm.
kind of you know, squelched all that, or whether I think what I'm learning now is, and our society needs to learn this too, that there are gay people that are not flamboyant, and I, you know, I didn't know that at the time.
Absolutely. There are gay people who look much straighter than many straight people.
Yeah. And so that's why I dismissed it right away, because I thought, you know, I mean, he doesn't talk like, you know, all the stereotypical things, which I know
mm-hmm.
is silly now, but as you said, the pieces didn't go together.
But that's why I tell men that no matter what they think, you know, like a couple of these guys who I'm working with, they said, well, I said, at least reassure your wives that has nothing to do with them. You're going for therapy because of problems that you're having.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can only push them so far, but I like them to at least to reassure their wives it's not them,
yeah.
even though that's just a drop in the bucket. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, the point is that, you know, I explain to them that their wives really believe it is their fault, that
yes.
no matter what
yes.
you want to tell them, they're internalizing that they're failing as a wife.
Yes.
And did you feel that way?
Very much so. And, in fact, I deteriorated down to the point of having major depression
mm-hmm.
and having to be medicated and your soul just gets broken.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what happened to me, was I just gave up. I gave up. I was just so frustrated, and I tried so hard to work, you know, to try to figure out what was wrong, and I wanted it so badly to work, and I just kept getting the door slammed in my face. And so pretty soon you just quit opening the door. And I just
mm-hmm.
turned inward, spiraled down, and just, well, I was about suicidal.
Well, I was going to say you just felt like a failure.
Yes. Yes, because the person who was supposed to value me the most
mm-hmm.
Didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, there was, what else was I, what was I doing wrong? I must be doing something wrong. I sure don't know what it is, but, you know, it just broke my spirit. It really, really did.
Now, did your husband in any way, after all this came down with the arrests and everything, did he in any way try to blame you?
No, I was lucky in that.
Mm-hmm.
He never, even through all of this, he never uttered an ugly word about me, ever. So I was lucky, I guess, in that way.
Mm-hmm.
And that was another part that was so confusing about it, too, and made it hard to leave, too, because how can I justify this person has never said a bad word about me, and here I am turning around divorcing them. And I
mm-hmm.
think that was hard for the kids to understand, too.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, he never did, and he, to this day, you know, never has. So that was fortunate. I think he just felt so guilty that he knew he was, I don't know, I would love to have a conversation with him about really when he knew and when he consciously, I believe he really thought that getting married would, quote, cure him or change him. I truly
uh-huh.
believe that he really wanted to be straight and really thought that it would work. Now, when that changed, I don't know.
Well, I think that almost all of our husbands go into the marriages like that. I'm not saying 100% because maybe I know 5% of our women, you know, like my dear friend Dolly, you know, with her husband, definitely wouldn't
mm-hmm.
even know how to say I love you from the very, you know, time they, you know, got married. But
mm-hmm.
I would say that 95% of the, you know, women that I've been through over the years had husbands who
mm-hmm.
really did love them when they got married.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that from, it's funny because, you know, I'm working on a book with my friend Doug, and it has interviews from 14 different men.
Mm.
It'll be out, you know, by Father's Day, and it's a real
eye-opener.
Even though it's a book that's geared for the men to help them come out to their wives.
Mm-hmm.
But I think women will find it very startling and shocking in many ways to read these stories because these men were really honest, you know, about what they did during their marriages and how they did it, you know, and they were very clear in not, you know, blaming their wives or feeling bad that, you know, their wives should take any responsibility for the most part. But, you know, like I say, it was really interesting to me that these men did love their wives when they got married. And even if they knew they were gay or had feelings that were gay, they were really hoping that that love for her would change that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they didn't want to be gay in the marriage, or they didn't marry her thinking, oh, well, I'll marry her and I'll act out on my gay life. They really believed they could, you know.
Right. I really believe that. They want to be normal, quote, normal, so badly. And I think that's one of the reasons why, and I'm just, this is just off the top of my head, I haven't really thought about it consciously, but because I know you had some men on the show that, I mean, they were really honest and I really appreciated that, but I really felt like they really still don't get it of what it does to the women. And I think
By the way, the men in this book also, I mean, as nice as they were, you know, it's from their point of view, and I understand that because it's really, you know, I wanted them to do this for other men so they would understand why it's important to come out.
Mm-hmm.
But they also, I think, miss the boat in some places of understanding, you know, what we go through.
And I think they're because they go in really loving you, they don't understand what else are you asking for that you know, what are you telling me that I don't get? And because I did love you, you know, and how can you say what, you know, and I don't know exactly how to explain it, and I hope probably never ask me, but I have had to accept the fact that he, and maybe because he's never really been in a male relationship to know what it could be like for him either, I guess, but, you know, to understand that subtle rejection over time, or that just lack of zest, and, you know, I'm just grasping at words because I've never been in a relationship that's going to have that I'm hearing from other people that is so wonderful. I haven't had that, but I keep telling myself that it's out there maybe, but they just don't understand the damage that it creates. And I don't know that I'll ever completely get over that. And I know he will never understand that. And I've accepted that. It's like a different language. I don't think I would be speaking in a language he didn't understand to try to explain that. So I had to accept that.
And that's why I think that your poem is just so beautifully stated. So maybe at this point, why don't you read the poem and then we'll talk about it.
Okay, and I'll preface this by saying it was a dark period a few weeks ago when the world just didn't look too happy for me. And a lot of things had come back and were kind of haunting me, I guess. So I just had to kind of get it all down and try to sort out what I was feeling, and this is what happened. It took me about 10 minutes, and it all came out. excuse me. Sometimes I just want to crawl into a ball and roll away. The shame of it all, I can't face it. Sometimes I just stare into space in disbelief, the deceit of it all, shattered trust. Sometimes I just want to stand on the table and shake my fists, the resentment of it all. How dare he do this to me? Sometimes I hold my head in my hands and wonder about the future, the confusion of it all. What do I do now? Sometimes I lay awake at night wondering who to tell, the stigma of it all, so much judgment. Sometimes I weep for my children, the innocent victims, the guilt of it all. They don't deserve this. Sometimes I cry myself to sleep as the damage runs deep, the sadness of it all, never being truly loved. Sometimes I sit stuck on the couch, paralyzed with fear, the scope of it all. I am on my own now. Sometimes I reach out to others who have walked a similar path, excuse me, the relief of it all, to not feel so alone. Sometimes I hang up the phone with him and his baggage, the serenity of it all, not bearing the burden of a toxic connection anymore. Sometimes I smile inside, looking back at my own inner strength, the courage of it all, surviving.
Well, that's just beautiful. And I know that, you know, for some of the women who were talking about this tonight in our support chat, you know, how they made such a connection to that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I just love about your writing, Wendy, is that you're just able to articulate, you know, the way that our women feel.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Misty and I often discuss that, you know, this whole process, and, you know, certainly you have your recovery list that we'll talk about in a moment.
Mm-hmm.
But I call it gay husband recovery because...
Absolutely.
It's not something that just happens and, okay, it's over and it's time to move on.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the recovery takes a long period of time, and
mm-hmm.
I can't set a number of months or years on it. Some people, you know, have to, it takes years because you have so much residual scarring from this whole thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And that even when you think you're moving ahead like you do, you know, it's been
mm-hmm.
a while.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you can move ahead, and you do move ahead, but it doesn't take much, you know, for something to just bring you back to that moment
mm-hmm.
where all those feelings come flooding out again.
Yeah, I think it's kind of like a recovering alcoholic. You know, they say they'll always be an alcoholic. They just learn to cope with it. And I think, you know, I'll always be a gay wife, straight wife.
Mm-hmm. I know, it's like part of our identity, especially when you've been in a marriage for a long time.
Yes.
You know, and that, you know, for many women, it's been, you know, most of their adult life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or at least half of their adult life.
Mm-hmm. And there are times, excuse me, I'm sorry. There are times when I, you know, I kind of move away from, I don't listen to the show as much. I read through the newsletters very briefly because I feel like, you know, I've moved on. I really don't want to go back to all that drama again. But
mm-hmm.
then I find myself in a place where I need to come back and kind of regroup again and recharge and reconnect and get that support again. So it has been interesting that I feel like I have come so far. When I just talking about all this tonight, it just seems like a million years ago that I went through all that. But then there are days when it just comes flooding back, like, you know, I'm never going to be the same. So I'm glad that everybody's here, that the group is here, because I think we'll always need each other the rest of our lives.
I know, and I think even if you don't need it now, you know, there are times when women, you know, write to me and they say, well, thanks so much for all you did for me. I want to get off the newsletter list. And then I'll get a note from some of them like 6 months or a year later. Can you put me back on?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, they feel like they just need that kind of support because sometimes, once again, those residual memories just keep coming back.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't mind, I just wanted to talk for a little bit. You know, you had put together a really wonderful piece of Before I Knew What I Thought Was Marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this was such a moving piece. And by the way, if you're not getting my newsletter and you're listening to our broadcast, all you have to do is write to me at bonk@aol.com or go to my website at gayhusbands.com and you can write to me through there. And I'll be happy to put you on my mailing list so you can receive Wendy's poem and also her other work that I send out to everybody who writes to me. But what I thought was just so great, you know, I have Wendy's list of Before I Knew What I Thought Was a Marriage. And I think this hit home for so many people because, you know, when you're going through this, and Misty always talks about it as dancing in the circle of crazy.
Yes, that's so wonderful.
Right, Misty?
Yes, the circle of crazy. It describes it.
Yeah.
And some circles are more crazy. It's like the three-ring circus circle of crazy. Mm-hmm. So it can be even crazier than the circle of crazy. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do you say, Misty, that when you're in it, like, you don't even know that you're in it, right?
No, you don't. You don't know you're in it. You really have to have someone trusted from the outside to help pull you out, because once you dance so far into that circle of crazy,
mm-hmm.
that circle just takes all your power away. And you just keep conforming. You just keep dancing in to do something else, to change yourself, to change yourself into what you think they want you to be.
Mm-hmm.
You, it's a continual process that never ends, because as soon as you make one change, you adapt to try to make another a change. I mean, it's a nightmare. It's a nightmare. When all you're doing is surviving, you're not really adapting to anything. You're just trying to survive. And it completely takes your power away.
Yeah.
And you've got to have support to get out. I'm a firm believer in seeking support to get outside that circle of crazy. And, you know, when you go through the separation and divorce process, if that's the route you choose, there'll be moments you'll be pulled back in, even if you've danced all the way out. You can still
mm-hmm.
be pulled back into it. It's vicious.
Mm-hmm.
It's vicious, but you can get out.
Mm-hmm.
As all of us speaking tonight, we're out of it, you know.
Yeah.
You can get out. That's the good part. That's the good news.
And I was in suicidal and in intense therapy before I knew. I didn't know at that point. And
mm-hmm.
so I went through that for a year and a half. And we kind of went round and round trying to figure out what I didn't know what was wrong. And then I remember talking to my therapist once I knew what was going on. She was like, okay, now we can move forward, you know, because
yeah.
I kept going in circles because I didn't
know.
Well,
that's why I wanted to talk a little bit when I'm just going to read some of these items on your list.
Okay,
and
I have
talk
it in front
them.
Of me too, yeah.
Okay, so here you have two different sides of this list. First of all, before I knew what I thought was marriage, him and me.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't you talk a little bit about him first then?
Okay.
What you perceived as marriage for him.
Okay, he preferred celibacy. He had a work addiction. He became more and more manipulative in conversations, and that was his way to cover up. I'm sure he got, you know, more better and better at making sure I didn't find out, I guess. Emotionally unavailable, ignored attempts for understanding, defensive about everything, always played the victim, everything was a crisis, always about him, very self-centered, always someone else's fault, withdrawal from family life, physical presence without emotional presence, with me and the kids when he was home. Demanding in subtle ways, very subtle, was never a big yell or screamer or any of that, but made sure that the world revolved around him. MIA, missing in action, time periods where I didn't know where he was. Acts as if nothing is wrong in the relationship. Everything is fine. What's your problem? I got that attitude quite a bit. Physical ailments all the time, dizzy, headaches, chest pains, hypochondria, distancing himself from the kids, narcissism, self-centered, which is what narcissism is, obsessed with achievement, appearance, and how he is perceived by others. Very insecure underneath it all. Insecurity masked by arrogance, feigned trustworthiness, control of finances, always a crisis, reliably unreliable. His days were far worse than mine daily. That really broke my spirit.
What was it?
His days were always far worse than mine, no matter what.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, mine too.
Tense, narrow-minded. And then I did put a disclaimer. He was never physically or verbally abusive, but it was as if he didn't want to ever be accused of being responsible for the demise of the marriage. So he would always act like, hey, I'm being the right husband. I haven't said anything wrong. I haven't done anything to rock the boat, so you don't have any grounds to divorce me, because what have I done? I haven't done anything.
Right.
I think it was subconscious. I don't think that was a conscious thing. But, you know, and I look back at how he's a lot still like this, even in divorce, still like this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, always a crisis. He calls me with all these crises all the time. But it sure
mm-hmm.
is nice to be able to hang up the phone and not have to... Because he's not dealing with it. He's back in the closet. I think his arrest and all that stuff scared him to death. And so he's back in the closet. And
a lot of men remain there.
Yeah, yeah.
Would you be surprised if he would get married again?
I would be. He's in his late 50s. Yeah, I would be. I think he knows me well enough that I wouldn't let that happen.
Mm-hmm.
I would make sure somebody was warned.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, he's not a real popular person in his circles.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know that he would attract anybody. I don't know.
Because a lot of these guys who are really closeted, many times they do go out and get married again.
Yeah.
You know, and that's even more distressing for a woman because then nobody wants to believe her.
Right. And I could see how that would happen. And I've had to really, you know, he's come back trying to be what I call my BFF, and I have had to shut it down. I mean, he's very lonely. He needs that nurturing that I provided in the marriage. And I am being very careful to not give it to him, but... So, yeah, I could see how that would happen.
Mm-hmm.
I really can see how that would happen.
All right. Now, when you were perceiving this is what he thought marriage is about,
mm-hmm.
let's go on to what you thought for yourself what marriage was about.
Okay. This is how I felt in the marriage.
I ask you to read this because I think when women hear this and they feel the same exact way,
mm-hmm.
that this will give them more confirmation if they don't have mm-hmm. any proof.
Good. Why doesn't he want me? I'm low priority, holding it together, pretending for the kids, cleaning up the mess of rejection for the kids, making excuses for him, relentlessly hoping, thinking, and willing things to change, searching for ways to fix, quote, it. I didn't know what it was. Anxiety about what the kids are feeling, depression, walking through mud, loneliness, lack of conversation, what have I done to deserve this, dread about the future, weary from keeping up appearances, existing instead of living, more like roommates, embarrassment. I should add shame to that, too. Bearing expressions of admiration for him by others. That was very painful. Isolation from family and friends and activities. Always having to justify his actions for the kids. Sad about the lack of reciprocity. Very true. Angry but sorry for him. Confused. Unhappy holidays, my spirit slipping away, intense shame that cannot be shared, unable to present a united front as parents, holding back with the kids to make less contrast between their relationship with mom and their relationship with dad. And that I realized much later that I distanced myself from the kids because I didn't want to get real close to the kids and then they would realize how distant their dad was with them. And if I would be a little more distant, then it wouldn't be as strange that their dad was being distant. And I didn't realize I was doing that until after the divorce and I was free of him and I was able to have a great relationship with my kids and I didn't care what his relationship was with them.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize that until I was out of the marriage. But,
now, when you talked about here, when you were talking about the shame,
mm-hmm.
Intense shame that cannot be shared,
mm-hmm.
and I think that many of our women naturally feel this when they talk, if I could bring it into the play of sexual rejection,
mm-hmm.
I don't know that exactly what you were referring to.
Yes.
But, you know, I think so many of our women would never have that discussion with anyone. I mean, what woman
right.
wants to say to her
right.
friends, well, my husband doesn't have sex with me?
Right, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that is one of the key factors in killing our spirit.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's, I mean, that's what being a woman is all about. But
mm-hmm.
but you at least the way I was raised, or I don't know, you just don't talk about that. And I remember my kids, I guess, were about elementary age, so I was about 15 years into the marriage, well, less than that, 10 maybe. Colleagues kind of joking about how their husbands just couldn't get enough.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember just wanting to crawl under the table when I heard that. I was like, oh my gosh, if they ever knew that my life was the complete opposite of that,
mm-hmm.
you know, I would be the laughingstock, or, you know, they would think there was something horribly wrong with me that my husband didn't want me. I clearly remember that sinking, icky, gut-wrenching feeling in my soul, you know, that something is terribly wrong here, but there is no way I can tell anybody. And I remember just trying to find, you know, literature or something to find out how to fix this.
Mm-hmm.
And there wasn't anything. So every time you search and you come up with nothing, then you immediately think it's you. There's something about me that is not worthy in that, you know. There's,
well, I think that that's one
to
of
your
the points
core.
that we make, you know, with men, that they don't understand when we talk about the damage that's done.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why, you know, when I'm working with these men who are very nice men, I mean, it's not like they're not nice, and they're not
mm-hmm.
even out there
mm-hmm.
cheating on their wives.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But they haven't had any kind of, you know, physical contact with them for years.
Mm-hmm.
And I keep saying to them, well, you can't just keep saying depressed, because your wife isn't going to believe that it's because you're depressed.
Mm-hmm.
She's going to believe that there's something wrong with her.
Mm-hmm.
And would you just confirm that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And even though, like, he was on blood pressure medication, you know, I kind of grasped at that straw.
Mm-hmm.
I still felt that I am not normal. There's something wrong with me. I am somehow flawed.
Mm-hmm.
To the point where I just don't deserve this. Even though there's a little voice in there who kept saying, something's wrong, I squelched that and said, well, I'm just not worthy. I'm just not worthy.
Right, and that's why I tell men that, you know, the damage that you do psychologically to women,
yeah.
even though it's not intentional, and I'm not saying it's intentional,
mm-hmm.
but once you're aware of what the damage is, then you have to see it for what it is and do the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
And to me,
yeah.
doing the right thing means being honest with your wife also.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are men that leave, but they're never honest about what the problem was.
That's not right. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You
and
know, they
I
owe that
you know,
to their wife.
They should be bending over backwards to make things right. I mean, there's things they can't do, but, you know, in the divvying up the money and divvying up this and the divorce and all that, it just astounded me that he was so, you know, the victim. You're doing this to me. And
exactly.
I just couldn't get over that. And I have talked to my kids about that, you know, and it just goes back to they just don't get it.
Mm-mm. I don't think they're able to, and they do feel many times like victims.
Yeah.
And I think in a way they are victims of society.
Yes, yes.
Victims of their upbringing.
Yes.
And, you know, I am very sympathetic to that,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, you can be a victim of all of these things and you still don't have to get married and then have a new victim as part of the whole, you know,
exactly.
process.
Exactly.
You know, I would feel far more sympathetic to men if they wouldn't get married and
right.
recognize that they are victims and that society should change, which I do feel like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I still feel that it's not right to know that you're gay and not tell your wife.
Absolutely.
And these guys who say, well, I don't want to tell her because it's only going to hurt her, how do you respond to that?
Well, it will, but that doesn't matter. Honesty, you've got to be honest. Got to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll I mean, it'll be shocking, and it'll be awful, and it'll be very hard to get through, but at least, you know, I felt tremendous relief once I knew that. It just, I mean, it didn't cure everything, and I'll never be the same, but at least I understood what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And things made sense to me. Things that had happened made more sense, and it gave me, I felt a little more stable in that the world was not totally crazy. You know,
mm-hmm.
I could step out of that circle of crazy a little bit and assess the situation. I had something to go by. You know.
And that's the whole thing. At least if you can understand what the problem
yeah.
is, and I always tell men, it will be the worst day of your life, no doubt.
Yes.
There could be nothing worse than,
yep.
you know, telling your wife that you're gay.
Mm-hmm.
But once you say it, it's over.
Mm-hmm.
And then you work with it from that point.
Yeah, and I will say we had some very honest conversations after that, after I confronted him about it. He never told me. I confronted him, but it was almost a relief to him, I think, to finally not have to keep up that cover anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It was a huge relief to him. And we did have some very honest conversations that we'd never had in 23 years. So, no, you absolutely, and you owe it to your children. You've got to be honest to your children. If you expect them to be honest in their relationships, you have to be honest with them. And that was
mm-hmm.
why I had to tell my kids. I just had to.
And I think you're absolutely right. I think that secrets really destroy.
Yes.
I really am convinced on that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when children look and they see that something's not right, they need to know why it's not right.
Yes.
Because otherwise they're going to think that what was abnormal is normal and then have
mm-hmm.
the same thing for their own lives.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have to understand that this is not the normal way of life, that this is not what
right.
marriage should be about.
Right.
Right?
And I felt tremendously relieved. And I mean, for 3 years I had to harbor that secret, and it killed me. It killed
mm-hmm.
me to have to, but I had to time it right too. You know, you have to be careful with all that.
Mm-hmm. How old were your kids when you told them?
20 and 23.
Mm-hmm.
So, I just, and we really don't talk about it anymore. You know, we don't really talk about it. But I just felt like...
Now, has their dad admitted it to them?
Nope.
Mm-hmm.
And going back to what we were saying, how the men don't get it, you know, when we had these, started having these honest conversations, talking about divorce, and you know, he was okay with that, didn't fight me on that, but he just thought I was just going to walk down the street and be picked up and be married off immediately. That would just show that he didn't get it. He said,
mm-hmm.
"Oh well, you'll just get involved in a church group and you'll just get married. You know, it will be it'll just be wonderful." And and here I am, 2.5 years later. You know,
right?
And
well, you know what? It may be 2.5 years later, but every day is a new day and a new day to put your foot forward. And I
right.
always tell women that,
right.
even
Absolutely.
Though they don't believe there can be true love out there waiting for them, for those women who want to find love again, they do.
Right. Right.
And it took me 11 years before I was ready to find someone again.
Right, and
you
keep
know.
Those letters coming in those newsletters.
Yeah, I mean, you know, but it's so worth it when you do find
yeah.
someone.
And I do hang on to that thread. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if I can trust anybody. I don't know if I can trust myself, but I'm not saying no to it. Kind of like in that letter, the newsletter, she went to that group kicking and screaming and
mm-hmm.
ended up working out. So I'm not totally shutting that door, but I have to accept the fact that I can't wait for Prince Charming to come sweep me off my feet either. So.
Well, I always tell women that when you meet a guy, You can tell them that they have to meet their Aunt Bonnie and bring it to my house, and I will find out for them within 10 minutes everything they need to know about that man.
Okay, good.
And
I'm glad you're there.
Oh, absolutely.
Aunt Bonnie services.
You know, that's right. I've done it for many women already. I'll give you a complete analysis of what that guy is about. And he'll just think I'm your aunt. I'm everybody's
okay.
Aunt Bonnie, and it really works out really well.
Okay.
And you'd be shocked how much I can find out about somebody in just a few short minutes.
I'm sure. I have no doubt.
Well, Wendy, I just want to thank you so much for joining us tonight because,
oh, you're
you
very
know,
welcome.
It's always so wonderful to talk to you.
Well, I'm glad I'm in a better state of mind now. I've come through my little dark period, and it was not too short-lived. It was short-lived, so that's good.
And I think that's an important point to get across to women who are listening also, that
mm-hmm.
you will go through these periods,
mm-hmm.
and there will be days when you wake up and you just feel like, you know, you're still in grieving and mourning
mm-hmm.
for something that, you know, you don't have anymore or something you wanted that you never had. And, you know, years of your life are gone and so many,
mm-hmm.
you know, things that you have to repair within yourself. But, you know, as more time goes on, those periods become shorter. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and yeah, now a few weeks ago, going to that the recovery map of the phases, you know, I put in that phase 4 not having ever been there, just thinking that that may be what it was going to be like, and I'm still not completely there, really not, and I kind of was saying that maybe there's a 3.5 phase in between 3 and 4 that I'm, you know, maybe that's what I'm in the middle of right now, where I'm kind of waffling a little bit, but. At least I do know that when I'm not feeling so strong and so positive, there's a whole group of people I can come back to, with you at the head of the group, to reassure me that and remind me that, you know, I have come a long way and that it's okay to stumble a little bit, but you know, and I've been I was watching myself. If it gets really bad, maybe I need to do something about it. But it fortunately didn't last long, and I'm back on the road again. And
I think that writing about it is great therapy because not only are you getting it out of your system, but when you share it with others, they can feel that connection.
And I really encourage people to write it, and it may not, as I said to you earlier, it may not always come out nice and neat in a nice verse. Mostly it doesn't, but this time it kind of hit. It came out, you know, it seemed kind of balanced the way it came out this time. But just to get it out on paper really helps you sort it all through. I really, really encourage people to do that. And you don't need to share it with anybody, but I don't even have to read it again, but just to write it and throw it in an envelope somewhere, throw it in a file somewhere, and then just kind of, you're not harboring it so much, and it does, I think it is very therapeutic to do that.
Right, and plus you never know, one day you may want to write a book.
Well, yeah, maybe.
And you'll have all your notes handy, right?
Yeah, yes, there you go. I do have a file that just says book on it, a file folder. And then I
well,
just
I'm
going to
be waiting for that book, Wendy.
Okay.
I'll be waiting to promote it with
breath.
You.
But I just do. I do. I write stuff, and I just throw it in there, and then I come back and look and go, wow, this was pretty insightful. But at the time, you're just writing.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
I think it's part of any growth experience if you can write it and look back on it.
Yeah, and you don't have to share it with anybody or anything. You just, you know, don't always like to look in the mirror. You have to kind of throw it in there and look at it later.
Exactly. Well, like I say, thank you so much, and we'll be waiting for your next revelation.
All right. All right,
and
I will
look forward to having you with us again.
Philadelphia Airport.
And have a wonderful trip.
Thank
you of me
so
when
much.
You're flying into Philly.
I sure will.
And if you can break away for an hour, remember, I'm right around the corner.
Okay.
All right. And listen,
right.
Thanks so much again, Wendy, and we'll
thank
be hoping
so
to hear
much.
From you again in a few months, okay?
All right. That sounds good. Thank you.
All right.
Good night.
Take care.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
Good night.
Not wonderful.
Wow, yeah, she always has so much insight. She really does.
I know.
As
she
a
really
way
hits
of putting,
it on the head.
I know, putting those thoughts that we go through, those experiences that we go through into some really nice words. And it's not long words. I mean, she can just really sum it up. Very great.
And I think what Wendy says is so true. We tell our women all the time, you know, write it down. If you're feeling it, write it. You don't have to be,
absolutely.
You know, a proficient writer. Just write down your feelings Because, you know, in 6 months from now, you'll look back at your feelings and you'll see, wow, that's how I felt then. Look how far I've come. And
it's
a reminder of your personal growth, right?
Absolutely. That's the best gauge of growth, is to write, in my own opinion. You know, of course, I'm a therapist and I encourage so many people to write, but, you know, writing really helped save me during that time, that dark time of emerging from crazy marriage, going through a divorce, and then getting on with my life and, you know, doing my hopes, my dreams, going back to school, finishing school, going back to grad school, you know, all those things. Writing got me through all of it. Writing, I tell my clients, that can be your best friend at 3 a.m. in the morning when you can't sleep. Write in your journal. And it's one of the best gauges of growth that there ever is. Always date your entries. Don't be checking for grammar. You know, it doesn't matter. Just write. Get it out. And I tell people, don't make live in your head what does not have to. Writing is a form of expression. It helps you process what's going on in your head. And it can help relieve some of that mental pain and anguish that you're going through during this process. It's just not an easy thing to go through.
And talking about writing, Misty, you know, we're also in the middle of getting our next Straight Wives Volume 2 together. So, you know, we have a lot of women who have volunteered to contribute to that. And I've been reading some of their stories, and they're just unbelievably wonderful. Because I think of all my books, the one that seems to have the most popularity is Straight Wives Shattered Lives. Because there's so many different women from all over the world, different cultures, different upbringings, and yet everybody has the same connection.
Absolutely.
And that book is now 5 years old. So I put out to our readership that I'd like to do a Straight Wives Shattered Lives Part 2 because, you know, I've met so many more women since that time it was initially written.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And all of them have wonderful stories. So we have some wonderful stories going into this book. And if anyone listening is interested in contributing, you know, we can certainly have you contribute for this book. Just get in touch with me, and I'll send you the guidelines in case you would like to be a contributor. If you would like to contribute, of course, it can be anonymously. Nobody has to know who you are because we only use first names, and you can pick whatever name you want. But I think that the more people can share their stories and make that emotional connection, the more it helps women going through this time of trauma. And women understand that it's not just them and they're not alone. And I just think it's, you know, a wonderful thing that all women, you know, can feel connected over this. So if you are in that writing mode, as we're talking about writing, please make sure to let me know and I'll be happy to send you the guidelines. So Misty, next week we're looking forward to having a special guest, Mr. Wayne Beeson. And we've had Wayne on here before. And, you know, I've met Wayne, you know, in person. He's just a wonderful man. And he's a leader of an organization called Truth Wins Out, which is an organization that fights the ex-gay movement.
Mm-hmm.
And this is really interesting for a lot of our women who are Christians, who are counseled with these ex-gay kind of movements that their husbands can change. And, you know, Wayne is at the helm of this whole movement to stop this kind of insanity of trying to turn people into something that they're not.
Yeah.
And just creating more pain for people for many years to come, trying to turn people into, you know, being straight, which just doesn't work, as we know you can't pray away the gay.
Mm-hmm.
So Wayne's been really instrumental. In fact, recently a lot of people read about Apple having an application on their iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
I'll see if I said that technically correct, since I'm not very technical.
Yes.
And it was like an
app. You can call it app on the iPhone.
Okay. For app phone.
That's the lingo,
But, you know, they had something on there, you know, to help people who were gay to become straight. And it was really offensive to so many people, and Wayne's movement really started this whole thing to stop that from happening, and he was finally successful a couple weeks ago. So, you know, he's done a lot of work in that area, and I know I've done, you know, a video for Wayne with several of our other women talking about, you know, how dangerous these ex-gay movements are because they just prolong the inevitable, making both parties feel inadequate. And so we'll be hearing from Wayne next week, so please make sure you tune in because you'll hear some really interesting news from him.
Great show.
So, Anyway, Misty, it's been another wonderful show. We want to thank Wendy, our guest.
Mm-hmm.
She did such a beautiful job. And if you're not on my newsletter list and you'd like to be on it and you'd like to get Wendy's poem, please feel free to write to me at bonk@aol.com. Also, please check out Misty's website at mistyhall.com. That's mistihall.com. And you can see all of Misty's beautiful work and the things that she does and her counseling and coaching. And short of that, we will be back next Sunday night with you. Oh, will we be back next Sunday night, Misty?
Sure as I know. Sunday night.
Isn't that Easter night?
Oh, that is right. It's Easter.
Well, so, we'll be here on Easter
I'll
night.
I'll leave it up to you. You know, yeah, I can be here. If you can be here, I can be.
Yep, I will be here. So,
okay.
And if you'll be here, that'll be great, and Wayne will be here. And hopefully everybody will be finished their Easter dinners. And they'll need something to relieve them from the tension of the night. And they can call and listen, or they can just tune into our show. How's that? So we will be here.
Great.
And we want to wish everybody a happy Passover this week, starting tomorrow night for all of our Jewish friends who are listening. And also a happy Easter for next Sunday before we get to you next Sunday night. All right, so Misty, I'll let you say goodnight first.
Okay, good night and love to all.
And good night to you, Misty.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.